wrapping the kids out of their coats, the way the babies haven't been born. Unpacking the bags and setting up, and planted lilacs and buttercups.
Welcome to Teacher Besties, a podcast for teachers. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Kelly. On this week's agenda, we'll talk about the Detroit teacher strike. We'll talk about some new announcements in college admissions, particularly a study called Turning the Tide from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And we will also talk about how you can support students who are frequently absent.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about your week?
Yeah. Well, in the last couple weeks, so I had finals. I told you last time we talked that I was going to have that project where my seniors taught like a whole class-long lesson about their focus country. Mm-hmm. And those went really well. They were super interesting. There were obviously some groups that were like more natural at teaching. And I think some of the people in the audience like realized after a while, like structure is really important. And when you don't have it, like nobody knows how to do the thing you're asking them to do.
Yeah.
But just like the insight into like various cultures and stuff was super fun to watch them get into.
That's neat.
They were all like genuinely interested in learning. So that was,
I think,
cool.
That's the best. So yeah. Did they do well?
Most of them did well. Most of them got like A's or B's. I gave one group a C+ because it was a little bit rough, but like they played this like simulation game for like 2/3 of their presentation where I was like, okay, you really are not thinking about time. But, most of the groups were really amazing. And then this week, yeah, I started teaching that same class, so seniors. I started teaching them the Serial podcast from season one in conjunction with Othello, and they are like obsessed with it.
That's so good.
They come into class being like, we've been talking about this all day long, and they've only listened to the first episode.
I hope that, I don't love Serial, I know you do, and like everyone else in the world besides me.
Yeah.
But I hope they spread the word and like,
yeah,
like I'm happy that there's connections being made and that's exciting.
It's really cute too, to see them like, you know, it's like for a certain segment of the population, it was like this cultural phenomenon that everyone was obsessed with last year, but it's funny for them who, you know, they were sort of not part of that. And maybe a few of them had heard of it, but like most of them are like, is Sarah Koenig, like, is this her part-time job? I'm like, this is the number one podcast on iTunes. This is her full-time gig. Like, she is a podcasting genius. So it's kind of cute to see like a little bit of their naivete, but you know, generally
that
speaking,
is really funny.
I appreciate it. What have you been up to?
Started a new unit with my freshman, which I really like. It's my population one, which my first year teaching, it might have been 9 weeks. Now I've been convinced it should be 3, but it's like a lot of like looking at trends and analyzing data, which kind of freaks everyone out because you have to do, oh my God, basic addition and subtraction and division. But it's, I really love it. And so I get really excited when I talk about it. And usually, well, now with the way block is, I don't necessarily actively teach the whole block. A lot of it's like monitoring while they work, because in theory, it's supposed to reduce the stress level.
Yeah.
But today was the first day in a long time that I taught the entire block.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. I missed it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm so the opposite. I get so uncomfortable when I'm like direct teaching for too long.
It wasn't necessarily direct teaching for too long. There were definitely like there were a lot of times when they had to work by themselves, but they were like little amounts of time, not necessarily like,
yeah,
okay, take a half an hour and do this component of a project.
Right.
More like take 5 minutes and make a list of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. No, I get it. I had to lecture, which I mean, I rarely lecture on anything like for more than 20 minutes, but I had to lecture for like 35 minutes the other day and I felt bad about it, but they should really get used to it.
They really should.
I mean, it's weird because we've definitely shifted our focus of like what how a teacher is supposed to deliver information. But sometimes I think like a lot of these kids are going to go to colleges where, you know, they're going to have like a 74-year-old professor at Oberlin who's like been doing the same lecture for 30 years. And
yeah.
They got to have that experience as well.
That's true. But at the same time, I think back to my courses in college, and there's really only one class I took that was pure lecture. Everything else was like small history seminars.
Wow, that's nice.
But I think also it's my content area, not necessarily that. Like, my husband, who doesn't have a history background, had very large lectures.
Yeah.
I'm like 300 plus people.
Because I think a lot of history programs are lecture-based. But
no, I mean, yeah. It's not that they didn't lecture at all, but oftentimes I felt like we were sitting like with all of our chairs set up in a circle discussing.
So you had small class sizes.
Yeah.
That's nice.
It was.
All right.
Go college. Anything else happening or something you're looking forward to?
This is kind of a ways out, but I am looking forward to, I'm going to that teaching tolerance conference in LA, which is like a project of the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they have a museum in LA. And so you go to the museum and then they have workshops. And
when are you doing that?
I am doing that in March, so it's a ways out. But I am.
I guess we can.
Yeah, we can talk about it later on a later podcast. But I guess it's on my mind because the grant writer was contacting me to get all my travel arrangements in order, and so that just happened today. So I'm like, yay, it's actually happening.
Cool. I'm going to an AP conference on Saturday.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I think it'll be neat. I don't know. It's a class I don't teach, so I'm curious to learn and see what it's all about.
I've actually been to the conference that you're going to and gone to one of the sections that I don't teach, and I found it very interesting and kind of fun. And knowing what kind of student you are, you'll probably nerd out, so.
I'm sure I will. I guess we'll talk about that next time, too.
Awesome.
All right, what are we talking about first?
Well,
I know.
I think probably most teachers around the country and just people in general have been listening to or reading about the strike among teachers in Detroit about, let's see, I think I saw that it was like 80-something, like maybe 88% of schools are closed as a result of this strike. About 45,000 students are staying home. The strike is, you know, the Detroit Federation of Teachers are basically asking that their schools are, you know, they're protesting the fact that their schools are dilapidated, that they're falling down, that like literally students have said that like ceilings have fallen in on them, that there are mushrooms growing up the walls, that they don't have enough books, that the lights turn off, just like really ridiculous, unacceptable infrastructure on top of, you know, a lack of resources.
In addition to also, I see black mold, schools with no heat, especially if you've ever been to the Midwest in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And asbestos,
which is a health hazard. Like,
yeah.
I mean, they're basically these kids are being put under, you know, not just stressful, like, education circumstances, but, like, completely unacceptable health conditions. And I see here in the article that, what is the guy? The guy that's like basically in charge of this or like responsible for this?
Yeah, his name is Darnell Early.
Yeah.
Early.
And he's also the dude that decided to like mess up Flint's tap water.
Yes. So, he decided to stop diverting water from Lake Huron and to save, what was it, $2 million?
So that guy is having like the worst life ever. And totally screwing with everybody else in Michigan. So, bravo, dude, you suck.
I really sympathize and felt bad, especially, I mean, like Michigan, specifically Detroit, has been having a rough time for quite some time. Yeah. Didn't they declare bankruptcy in 2008?
Yep.
And so it's really sad that like federal funding couldn't be diverted to fix the schools there.
Well, and I mean, it's also just like the schools thing plus the Flint water situation. I mean, it's like, it's totally obvious and probably doesn't need to be said, but it's just, it's really sad to see like that mass amounts of poor people are just basically being like completely denied the rights that we sort of think of as, you know, like the things that even poor Americans should have the right to or like do and take for granted. Like we're a, you know, not just a developed nation, but like the country that people look to as a leader. And, you know, like I used to make jokes about people that drank bottled water all the time. And I would always be like, ugh, like, why do you need to drink that? Like, it can't be that bad. We live in America. Blah, 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 blah. But it's like when that is messed up, like, what is wrong with this? It's so absolutely infuriating.
So often when I think about Michigan, I really just think about Ann Arbor. And sometimes I know Detroit is in Michigan, but sometimes I forget they're in the same state because they're so different. And like Ann Arbor is super nice and like that area around it. And it's so close to Detroit.
Yeah.
And it's so sad.
Well, and Detroit is just like, I mean, there's plenty of cities like this in the U.S., but it's like a classic, you know, segregated city where there's just like extreme wealth in certain suburbs and then just extreme poverty, mostly in the city. But, you know, basically to get back to like the central topic here, it's like these teachers, they're striking for their students. They're striking for the fact that not only should they not have to work in those conditions, but really overall that like their students can't learn in those conditions and it's not healthy for them. And then, you know, they're going on strike and being painted like villains as if like they don't want to go to work and they're lazy. And this, what was his name? Early?
I don't know how to pronounce it. E-A-R-L-E-Y. Early?
Yeah. He was like trying to get them to go back to work and have a judge force them to go back to work, right?
Yeah. I guess some like things I thought about while learning about this. One, totally prove my confirmation bias because I've only read positive articles about how great it is that all these teachers are on strike.
Yeah.
Standing up for students, not necessarily the other way around.
Right.
And two, I don't remember what the second one was. Sorry. The dog just jumped up on me and she was really cute. there's the second thing. And I think like, well, if I was a teacher in Detroit public schools, would I have quit before this? And would I be willing to strike?
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, think about how many teachers, not only are you working under the pressure of teaching students that don't have the resources they need at home, but then you come to school and just the basic things you need to give them, a place that for many students living in poverty, school is the only place they can go where it's safe, where it's clean, where they have a lunch they can eat, where, you know, they have facilities that work, and then to take that away from them, like, I can't imagine being the student, but also, I'm sure they've lost tons of teachers to these problems.
I'm sure, too. And I'm curious, I wonder if Teacher America is still sending people into these conditions. Like, are they involved, too?
One of the, I say, standout stars in this story is a student named Imani Harris, who wrote, is a sophomore at Renaissance High School in Detroit, and he wrote, like, an open letter saying, you know, like, supporting his teachers, saying that they are, like, representing the students, that they're protesting and doing sick outs because they're standing up for the kids, and he like calls out one of his teachers that said saying that he's like the best, most dedicated person that he's ever come in contact with, that he, you know, the teacher comes in early, stays late. He says this teacher teaches honors algebra 2, geometry and German 1. Where would you find a teacher that can teach all three of those classes effectively if you fire him? And then he also goes on to say that, like, you know, our teachers are doing the best that they can, and that having a sick out or a protest is not going to hinder my education any more than it was when I went a whole semester without a French teacher and an English teacher.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's just calling out the system, basically, and saying, like, you know, when it's convenient for you, you tell these teachers to go back for the betterment of the students, but you're not fixing the infrastructure, and, you know, there's plenty of job openings that just go unfilled where students are sitting in a classroom with a substitute that I'm sure is not teaching them anything.
Yeah, very, very true.
So I'm sure you can follow this story more. He ended his letter with hashtag DPS students fights back. So
awesome.
Love it. Love the 16-year-old spin on it. And, you know.
And look up the hashtags of this, because especially on Instagram and Twitter, where you can see the pictures of, I guess you could technically see that on Facebook too.
Yeah.
Where you can see the pictures of the really terrible conditions. Yeah. Is just astounding, and it makes you want to do something.
Yeah, no, the visuals, I think, are an important thing, and, like, it's another example of how, you know, like, some sort of social media or some sort of, like, citizens journalism, just, like, taking the pictures and hashtagging it. Like, when people are reading about this situation, I think they have a better ability to check in on it rather than just kind of hear, you know, however the media is...
Yeah.
The story.
I wish really fast, just like, I guess I'm not a digital native, because I wanted to look up more pictures. And so instead of looking up the hashtag, which I totally should have done.
Yeah.
I Googled Detroit public school strike pictures. And then I looked through the Google images of it.
Oh, instead, that's and not I feel, bad.
No, but it's silly. I should have just looked on Instagram. I didn't even think about that.
I think both options are plenty acceptable. But
okay, thank you.
You know what? If you want to, like, concede to your freshmen and tell them, like, you know, this is maybe one thing that you guys would have been better at about being a digital native than me.
No concessions. I'm not telling them anything.
No concessions. Be a hard ass.
I am. Every day.
So anyway, winner of this story, Imani Harris and the Teachers of Detroit.
And also, we didn't add that the teachers union is now suing the school district, which it'll be great to see what happens.
Yeah. They need to get some funding in there.
Yes, they do. Maybe Shinola, a great Detroit company, the only watch made solely in America.
yeah,
maybe Shinola will donate.
Throw some money.
Shinola,
that,
come sponsor us. Do you want to talk about chronic absenteeism?
Yeah. So let's see here. I was reading this article. It was actually from the website of the conference that I'm going to. So it's from Teaching Tolerance, which I actually find to be a really good, like, if you want to follow them on Facebook, they put a lot of interesting things up about teaching. And so that's good stuff. So this is about supporting students that are often absent, which I will be the first to say that I have, you know, I'm not always good at this. I'm not always good at, like, being empathetic towards students who are absent, which this article is largely about showing empathy towards them. The woman who wrote it, Dina Simmons, says she's a teacher now, but that she had a twin sister who was chronically ill in middle school, and that, it was really difficult for her to catch up, and that, you know, she and other people that are chronically ill often find it, like, embarrassing when their teachers call them out.
Which, like, who the heck does that?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that it's not as blatant as it, like, or commonly blatant as, like, I think we're thinking, but, like, I'll be the first to fess up and say, like, when I have chronically absent students, I have probably been known to, like, give them attitude, or, like, I'm not...
Oh, I give attitude, but I don't think I would ever call somebody out in front of the whole class.
Well, yeah, but, so, I mean, I do think that it can be difficult to naturally show those students empathy because you have less time to bond with them. And also because in addition to having less time to bond with them, when you do see them, they're always, I don't want to say a burden, but they're always asking you for something in addition to what you're doing. And as much as that is like our job and like we should step up to it, I think in the moment it can feel really frustrating, and sadly, like sometimes that kid is the result of your frustration. So
yeah,
I'm just going to own that because I've definitely done it in the past. Although, so they offer a bunch of tips.
They do. I was very excited about the tips, and I guess I'll let you read through them first.
Okay, so they suggest having a keep a ketchup binder where you put the handouts in, and they specifically say, or she specifically cites, to write the student's name on the top, because then when they get it, they realize that you actually missed them as an individual from the class. Which, you know, I actually think like that is not that hard to do. So I thought that was a pretty good tip. I used to have a binder like that in my classroom, and I don't anymore. And I think I don't have it anymore because I have so much stuff online, but I actually think I should restart it because there's so many kids that just don't take advantage of the online resources.
I have everything online, as you know, but also when there's a handout, this is like not a binder, but it works for me. Mm-hmm. I put the student's name on top on the like sheet, and I put it on a magnet and I put it on the whiteboard.
Ooh, that's good.
However, then if they're often too much, yeah. I don't have a plan for that. Well, I do my online plan, but
yeah,
not a whiteboard magnet plan.
I think the best, one of the best ones that I should really take advantage of more was the suggestion to, like, get a friend in the class to, like, commit to supporting them. So
yeah,
that's something that I usually put on the student, but, you know, maybe it is worth it to just sort of, like, figure out who that kid's support system is and ask them to, like, maybe even just always hand them the extra handout if they're responsible.
Absolutely. I really like the third one, obviously. Number three is keep a class blog or online portal. Mm-hmm. I am like the blog queen.
Yep.
I love my blog so much.
What do you
use? I use Blogger. Okay. It's really easy. It's through Google. I think I need to be sponsored by Google because I use like Google everything.
Me too. I use Google Classroom, and I actually want them to call me and be like, would you like to come in and test the materials for us before we do it?
Whenever they ask for feedback, because I get a lot of pop-up notifications from my Google Classroom and Blogger, I always leave a ton of feedback.
Yeah.
Except I'd like to be paid for it, Google. Do you hear me?
I don't need to be paid for it, but I want to be, like, recognized.
also, I was looking into this week becoming a Google certified educator.
Ooh.
But I'm not really sure, like, why you would do that yet. If anyone wants to explain that to me. Well, I mean, like, it doesn't seem like, I'm not really sure what you get out of it.
Well,
I haven't explored it enough.
If all I get is lunch on the Google campus, I will do that.
I would be willing to do that too. But anyway, Blogger is amazing, and my blog is beautiful. It's got wood paneling on it, mm-hmm. like my background, which is not the point. But the point is that everything I have on there is hyperlinked to my drive. Mm-hmm. And so even like old things that I had to scan in or retype, like everything is on the computer with a description of like what we did in class to go with it. Mm-hmm. And if there's an assignment where they need to submit it, whether it's like simply sharing it with me or submitting it to the classroom. And then one of the tabs I have on my blog is the resource folder. So if they don't want to scroll through all the blog posts, like everything is sorted by unit and mm-hmm. they can go into the resource folder and just make copies of any document they want.
Yeah. I have literally everything on my Google Classroom, like every slide, every handout, everything is on there. They can get it all. Unfortunately, though, I think sometimes, I mean, just depending on what is the thing that's stopping them from getting in class, like, it's not always chronic illness. Sometimes it's, like, problems at home. In our area, a lot of times it's, like, housing instability.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times when it's that, they're not checking online.
No, they're not.
Which is a real bummer because it's a resource that, like, I mean, we didn't have that when we were in high school.
No, we did not. But that leads us to number four, which is a really good transition. And that is to schedule one-on-one time. And this is the only thing, to be honest, sorry, that I like about block scheduling is that there is built-in tutorial time for one-on-one time. And I know we've talked about this before, but this year with like our little scan-in system for attendance for tutorial, you can type in a student's name and you can figure out what classroom they're in. So if they haven't come to your classroom, you can find them and then help them.
That's great. We do not have that, but we're trying very hard to push for something like that. But I mean, yeah, because when you don't have it built into the schedule, it can, that can be one of the hardest things to implement. But yeah, one-on-one time. The other thing that I noticed on the list that is probably pretty difficult to implement, but you know, if you value it, might be worth seeking out, is incorporating characters with diverse abilities and health statuses in particular into your curriculum. So that's definitely something that's hard.
I thought that one was sweet, but I wouldn't if I mean, like, besides, I'm like the only person I can think of historically is Helen Keller. I know that's such a cliched example.
Stephen Hawking, someone, man.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry, Stephen Hawking. But, like, I don't even talk. I just talk about physical geography in my class. I can't even begin to talk about that. Like, there wouldn't be a way for me to make that connection.
I'm going to think about how to do it for you.
Okay, thanks.
Although I don't know how to, I haven't done it in my class either. So, the other thing is, they end off on reach out, you know, to the email, use email or text or, you know, some other service to reach your students or the parents of those students. And, the other idea is to definitely reach out to your other educators that have the same student, because chances are they're missing all those classes as well. So if you can kind of split the duties of checking in on them.
Yeah. Something that I did, I copied it from a colleague, but then I figured out how to make it better. And you know how you fill out that form, or your students fill it out in the beginning of the year, and it's like your name, your email, so that way, like, if you want to get in touch with them, it's easy to, and you don't have to look it up every time. So they did that, like, as a submission via Google Classroom. I redid it as a survey. So they do it on Google Forms, and then you just have to pull up one document, and all of the students' emails are in one place.
Nice.
And it's beautiful.
I like that.
Yeah, I like it too.
What else? Oh, I was going to say that I think for me, the biggest thing that I have to take away from this is just, like, I don't know, being a little bit more understanding for those students that are missing. I think that's something I definitely need to work on. And I think every year now, ever since our, like, housing here has gone up dramatically, every year I have a few students that are chronically absent. And the reason is always that their family can't find stable housing. So I think, you know, that already has to suck to be, like, what you're dealing with when you're 15 or 16 years old. So to just, I don't know, maybe, like, not always assume. Like, I think because we work with kids that the majority of them are affluent or the majority of them are very privileged, that we sometimes then make assumptions about all of them. And I don't know, I need to be better about that.
Yeah, I think that if anything, like, what we, our New Year's resolution could have been in the classroom is to empathetically recharge ourselves.
Yeah, that's always good. Yeah. You can never go wrong with that, right?
Probably not.
So let's go on to our last topic, which is kind of an awesome announcement.
Yes. Do you want to explain the announcement? I feel like you've done all the good explaining today.
Yeah, I'll try. So basically, there was a huge announcement from, like, the very elite college admissions community. The Harvard Graduate School of Education released a study titled Turning the Tide, and it presented information from, like, most of the, you know, sort of power players in the big schools. So top administrators from Yale, MIT, Harvard, University of Michigan was cited, it was like 80 members of either being an administrator, being a president, or being heavily involved in the admissions of that school. They came up with this report basically that had specific suggestions on how they need to restructure admissions in order to value students for contributions
not just
to the community
academics.
And not just academics. We all know that, you know, a big topic of discussion right now is that a lot of students, particularly middle and upper middle class students that are competing for these top spots, are, you know, basically jeopardizing their mental health in order to take 6 AP classes and 3 sports and community service and this and that, yada, yada, yada. List goes on and on. And then you throw in the kids that are like trying to make something for themselves, and they're coming from a working class family and they're working a job on top of competing with that. And these kids aren't sleeping, they're not eating, and, you know, all that. So
yeah, and in addition to that, then the article also notes that the kids who are overstressing themselves with 6 AP classes, by the time they get to college, they don't have anything to bring to the community.
Yeah, they're totally burned out. So the biggest thing that I noticed that they were stressing was that the structuring of the admissions now is heavily influencing students to become competitive and to basically just think about themselves and their grades and their resume as like the most important thing in their life. And what this process wants to do is somehow restructure it so that making a significant contribution to your community and the people around you becomes a very important part of your admissions. They also wanted to devalue testing and also put a cap on the number of APs that they will actually look at that you've taken.
Which I think is so beautiful.
Yeah. Because then it's like all we keep telling them is don't take so many APs to burn yourself out. And then they roll their eyes at us. They sign up for 4 or 5 APs because they feel like that's what they have to do to get into these schools. And then they're exhausted and unhappy.
Yeah. I mean, when I was in high school, I took a total of 3 AP classes, and they were all ones that I like was very passionate about.
Yeah, exactly.
And then also, I really am excited about this. I think that like giving back to your community and like having the desire to do it and finding students that want to is like the biggest indicator of how awesome someone can be.
I also think that, you know, this, the community element, there's 2 really good things about it, that I can think of. One is the students, I think, that already have an advantage that tend to be from these affluent communities who I think sometimes can be really self-involved and really unaware of the reality of the world around them. I wouldn't want to admit a lot of those students. I'd rather have somebody that was actively engaged in something really important. And that way, when they're going to these prestigious colleges, they might actually do something important with their life that makes a significant impact on the world. And then also the kids that are coming from, you know, either poverty or working class communities, those kids probably are actually seeing something significant in their community happen. And a lot of times those kids have to contribute to their household financially, mm-hmm. or they're involved in things in their community that make a difference. And so now that may, you know, bring some value to their application that they can't compete against some of these other kids that are just, you know, pouring thousands of dollars into SAT prep.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. I know you know this. I'm not sure if I said this on the podcast before, but in high school, I was a candy striper for the local hospital.
Of course you were.
So every Friday after school, and sometimes more than once a week, but not usually, I went and did candy striping things.
Aww.
And then, like, service project and being service-minded is just I don't know. It's the best feeling. I always think about that episode of Friends where Phoebe is trying not to do something for her. She wants to be completely selfless and she doesn't want to like gain anything from it.
Right.
And then she winds up donating money to PBS, and for some reason she hates PBS. I don't know why.
Well, no, because she realizes everything she's doing for everyone else makes herself feel good.
Yeah.
And then she's getting something out of it. So then she tries to do something that's completely selfless because she doesn't feel good about donating the money.
Yeah, no, but she really doesn't like PBS. And then Joey gets on TV and like she's very happy. But I will fully admit that I love the feeling of helping people. In fact, I've been looking for a new service project for a long time.
Yeah.
I think I finally found one. There's something associated with the public library around here teaching adults actually how to read.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I also think that like a lot of the kids that live in our suburban areas here, like in the Bay Area, especially where there is a lot of concentration of money, like I think a lot of those kids, like we sort of live in neighborhoods that are, not very like social, not very neighborly, like very isolated. People go to work, they come home, they don't like really interact with their community. And, I know, like, since I've moved into, like, a more urban community, like, I've definitely noticed more community engagement, and, like, I really enjoy it. Like, I really like getting to know my neighbors and, like, having a small neighborhood or community to have some say in and contribute to, and I think that if students don't naturally have that, they should definitely be encouraged to do it, and not in, like, a tick-the-box kind of a way, so... It's going to be interesting to see how they actually implement that, because how are they going to do it in a way that makes it so that it's not a tick the box thing?
Yeah, I also thought of that when I was reading about this, and like I'm not sure if there's a way. I think it's just like embedded in you. Either you have that desire to do it, or you know it's the right thing to do because it'll look good on a resume.
Right.
And honestly, is it really that bad of a thing if people are doing nice things to make their resumes look good? They're still doing something good at the end of the day.
No. I mean, I agree with you on that. I think it's more like the depth version of it, of like, we don't want you to just like do this community service club where you go to a meeting once a week and put it on your college application and don't really ever get anything out of it or don't spend a lot of time involved in it, but rather like maybe you're involved in something for your entire high school career and you like really see it through. And do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I agree.
I could see,
obviously, based on my experiences,
I could see it being something where like they add another letter of rec where you have to get a letter of rec from like one of these people that like an adult that you worked with on some sort of community engagement project.
That's a good idea. Harvard, pay attention.
Yeah. Or I don't know what else they could do, but that's one idea.
I like it. I approve.
Excellent. So I'm wondering like how long this is going to take though to implement, because it really does seem like since this was such a huge announcement and also so many of the big schools are backing it that like it's going to be attempted. But
I'd say I'm going to give it 2 years.
Yeah, like the sophomores or freshmen now may be impacted by this.
Yeah. And obviously it also impacts the way we teach and how we would change. Well, I don't think I would actually change anything, because I think inclusivity and like being a whole-minded person and being community-oriented is embedded in what I do.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think that definitely like the types of classes students are taking would change. And I mean, the school I work at, it has a graduation requirement of community service, but it doesn't seem to be meaningful. And also, like, I feel like anyone could just sign that form. Like, half the time, I think it looks like cheating.
Yeah, I see what
you mean. I think you only need 40 hours. 40 hours over 4 years is not that much time.
I know. So.
It's like no time.
Yeah.
It's like a week of working. Oh, my God.
But wouldn't it be amazing if, like, one part of something that came out of this, because the parent piece is always so intense and, like, You know, sometimes I think, like, when I'm driving through the community I teach in or other, you know, very suburban communities, and I drive by all those tutoring centers, like the Kumon and, you know, all those places, and I see the kids going in there after school and just doing more school, basically, and yeah. It kind of makes me sad and depressed, and I think, like, wow, all of those super helicopter or, like, paranoid parents that are sending their kids to these, like, tutoring and SAT prep and all that stuff and dumping all that money in. Like, imagine if, like, they had that kind of energy behind, like, some sort of community project.
Yeah, and I guess also, like, maybe it's an indicator that parents, like, do more for your communities. Right. Show your children, like, good behaviors and patterns.
Yeah, for real.
I also found a volunteer opportunity, by the way, to be a Girl Scout troop leader, and I thought about that for a minute.
Save it for when you have a kid.
Yeah, I'm not ready for that step yet.
Yeah.
I think you also know that I was a Girl Scout.
I was a brownie and then I quit, which is, like, so indicative of who I am. And the fact that you were a Girl Scout, like, all the way to, like, Eagle Scout version of Girl Scouting is, like, exactly who you are.
I'm a lifetime member, Kelly. Let's be real.
I know.
Me and Girl Scouts, it's a forever relationship.
That's pretty cool. Also, no, the discount Girl Scouts on are cookies. Always, like, way better at, like, social justice stuff than Boy Scouts. Like, boom, I just threw down on the Boy Scouts, but it's true.
It's so true.
They're so much faster to adapt.
Yeah. That's also just indicative of society. Do you want to hear, before we end, a fun fact that I learned today?
Yes.
In doing population data trends?
100%.
Did you know, which I'm sure you didn't, that 58% of the Rwandan government is made up of women?
What?
Guess what percentage the United States is?
12.
Oh, that's close. 19. Ugh, 19%.
Damn it. I'm usually really good at guessing statistics like that about the U.S. But you know what?
Go Rwanda. They deserve it.
Go Rwanda. But also, it's a sad day, America, when the Rwandan government has kicked your ass in feminism.
Yes. True.
So, you know what? You lost on the education of the Detroit children and the government.
You want to hear something else funny about my week?
Right. Yes.
I also had to teach 4 sections of freshmen what the word contraception meant.
Ooh, oh my God. Please, please, please tell me how you did that without feeling like you were going to lose your job.
Because I was talking about population trends and demographic transitions and how an introduction in medical technology has changed the way societies have progressed and why people don't need to have as many babies. Yes. And so I didn't really talk about it from, like, a feminist perspective. I almost did with one class and I was like, nope. Bring it back in.
No need. Exactly what you were teaching is feminist. Doesn't need to be said.
And then, like, one of my classes, my rowdier class, I was talking about, I'm like, and it's not just birth control pills. It's all types of things that prevent babies. And someone's like, what else is there? And then nice. I proceeded to list, like, everything. And the best is when you see the kid in the back who's turning red because they're like, oh, my God, this lady's talking about sex.
I love it. Oh, but speaking of that,
I do it. No shame.
Another red-faced moment today. On that same note, I was reading the short story "Soldier's Home" by Ernest Hemingway with my juniors, and long story short, the soldier has just returned from World War I, and he's commenting on, like, the styles of the girls' hair, and he says that, like, you know, when he went away, like, saying that all the girls have their hair bobbed. When he went away, the only girls that wore their hair like that were either little girls or ones that were fast. And a student raised their hand and said, what does it mean to be fast? And I just went, it means they were having sex. And we moved on. I think
that's funny.
But this was not a naive kid. This was a junior that probably knew, but, like, wanted a clarification, like, genuinely wanted it. Yeah, I know. I'm always excited when any sort of, like, real talk can like, insert its way into my class discussion.
And I don't think I would have anything to be concerned about talking about.
Oh, no. I just meant more from the standpoint of, like, you know, sometimes you get into some dicey areas and you have to navigate those.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, like, for example, today when a kid raised his hand and the very first question of the day was, what do you think about Donald Trump not participating in the debate tonight? And I said, I think that he's accomplishing his goal by getting us to talk about him right now. Moving on.
Good for you. I said someone was talking about colonizing Mars. Oh, and God. Or like other planets. I have very interesting students.
Yeah.
And then Donald Trump came up, and I'm like, oh, Donald Trump should go start the colonization movement. He can go there.
Right. And not come back.
Yep.
I feel pretty safe, you know, just knocking on Donald Trump right now, because if anybody really likes him that listens to our podcast, I'm okay with losing them.
Well, the PC part of me would like to say that any listener is welcome. However, they're wrong. And thank you for listening this far. You don't have to listen again.
I like to think that our listeners are smarter than that.
Oh, I would sincerely hope so.
Boom.
Anyway, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. You can find us. Where can you find us?
You can find us on iTunes by searching Teacher Besties Podcast, or you can email us teacherbesties@gmail.com, or we're still on Tumblr, and it's a nice place to look at the whole collection of podcasts, which is
teacherbestiespodcast.tumblr.com.
Oh, my bad.
It's all right.
And obviously, we'll talk to you. Oh, I'll talk to you soon, but internet, we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, see you in a few weeks. Bye.
Bye.